I was thinking about what I would say, and I realized, I think about this all the time. Our logo, one of the circles is mission, and I realized we barely talk about the logo. Some of you might not even realize that it isn't just a pretty graphic, but it has significance. So I thought I would give away a gold star to anyone that could give me the other two circles in the logo. Mission's one of them. What are the other two? This one person, see if they can do it. See if you know two. Sue? So, I will give you a silver star. You know, Ariana? Ooh, well, you had one word that you needed to add to her, Sue. So it's spiritual practices and community. It was formation, but then we switched things around 2 years ago. So now, yeah, keep you on your toes. So it's mission, community, and spiritual practices. And spiritual practices used to be formation. But really, all of those are components of formation. So that's why we changed spiritual practices. What we really meant was spiritual practices. We got more precise. And when all three of those are running together in the center, that's formation. That's where transformation happens. So I thought I'd give a little blurb there at the beginning. So mission is such a core component to our church. And we really believe that if as part of the Christian life, you being engaged in mission is core to who we are. And if you're not, you're not running on all three cylinders of our circle. It's also one of the directives. We have five directives that kind of help us decide what to do as a church. So let's read this together. We believe being formed in the image of God means being... I actually didn't mean together. I'm sorry. I was misleading. Misleading. All right, whoever got the silver stars, no, I'm just joking. So we believe being formed in the image of God means being a reflection of Jesus, even if imperfectly, to the people around us. We are committed to promoting the values of the kingdom of God, justice, equality, mercy, and grace. Furthermore, we honor, respect, and partner with organizations that may be different than us in order to serve the community. So a couple things I wanted to highlight. I like that line about the bottom one. We partner with organizations. You don't find that in a lot of descriptions about what mission is or why we, that's one of our directives. So there is a unique story of why that got in at the beginning that I've heard. But I think why it continues to be relevant is that Jesus worked with broken people and broken systems, and we are all broken. And so partnering with different agencies that might believe something different than us, or that might not communicate in the way that we like, or might not focus on all the facets of something that we like, a particular issue, still important, because they're still doing the work of the kingdom. And so we are committed to partnering with them. In fact, our main partner in Honduras, Mercy International, we constantly have frustration about the lack of response from them, emails, delays of emails, communication. And so I'm constantly like, you know, trying to reach out and get information, but they're doing such great work, you just overlook those things. And I think maybe the younger generation, there's like, if it's not perfect, then just give up. It's like, just throw it, toss it aside. And so I really like that we are committed to partnering with different organizations. Another thing that I like about what this says is it said being a reflection of Jesus, even if imperfectly, and recognizing that we are, that the image of God in us means being a reflection of God, that we have a piece of God's heart in us, and it's our part of our role is to nurture that that image of God within us. What this doesn't say is you have to be going to Haiti or Honduras or be a full-time missionary. It doesn't say that you have to start a nonprofit or that you have to work, you know, be a manager at a soup kitchen or something. And so I like that it's general enough that it's all the ways that we promote the kingdoms of God, the kingdom of God values, justice and love, equality, mercy, grace, beauty, etc. So I really liked this scripture. I thought it was specific to today, that each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. To me, that really connects with the image of God, that God made us all so different, but yet there is the image of God in each of us in its various forms. And so nurturing that and using whatever gifts we have given to serve others and leaning into opportunities. I think we can't get specific in our description of mission because it is so customized to our lives and who the people that we're around, the families that we're connected to, our places of work, and the organizations that we're partnering with. And so it's as a collective effort, but we're each doing our individual part. And oftentimes we know this is the goal, but we don't rise to the occasion. That there are barriers to mission. So I thought we could discuss this for a bit. There are various things that prevent us from meeting our ideals. Even though we know this is true, we know this is a value, a core component of what it means to follow Jesus. But for whatever reason, there are barriers to it. So what are some things for you that prevent you from living out this calling, this opportunity to be a reflection of Jesus in your everyday lives? Selfishness. Thank you for your honesty. I think that is true. Busyness. Yeah. I think that's really true. Insightful. Thank you. Can everybody hear what has been said? Okay, sorry. So I'll say what Joe said. Insecurity, not being able to even have confidence that you have something to offer, that you can be a reflection of Jesus. And I think that's part of the nurturing, too. I think it's, you know, we give our best and maybe eventually that grows to be something better than it was before. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, it's not extravagant like you maybe picture or imagine in your head. It seems like that might be usually the case. Other barriers or thoughts that seem to prevent you? Yeah, I think that's true. You don't have the resources to make your dream happen. Yeah. I really like that comment, Summer, because I think my picture of Jesus is that he had this almost like a supernatural skill to notice the people around him, to see their worth for who they really were, and that's like intense presence, basically. You know, he was so present in the moment that he didn't lose sight of the worth of the kids around him or the people around him, the individual. And I think that's the brilliant, you know, we think about the world, you know, impacting the world or impacting this city. But what if it's just this person? You know, what if it's this individual, not losing sight of that tension? Other barriers, thoughts on this subject? Or feel free to bounce off of somebody else's idea and share something that you've been toying with in your own journey. Yeah, it feels overwhelming and makes you not take any action because you don't know where to start. Well, that seems like a good place to end, unless there's anything else that's top of mind. So for me, I think I've had a lot of those same barriers, and I live with them constantly. And especially for me, I'm thinking about, you know, this stuff through the week. It's in my face, you know, and so I'm faced with the reality of my inadequacy and how I don't line up to the definition that we said, but still trying to strive. And what I have found the most motivating is hearing other people's journeys and other people's stories, and that has been inspiring to me to take action to push past my laziness or my pride or my fears because I hear what they've done. And so I wanted to spend the rest of the morning on the mission component hearing and sharing a few stories that I've heard from people. And so I want to start with Karen. With Kyle. Where did you go? Here you are. Okay. You're sitting right here. I was expecting Kyle. So Kyle, thanks for being our first guest. You're welcome. So share us So you and Katie went to Honduras back at the end of April. So tell us a little bit about your trip.
Okay, so this was my first mission trip, or whatever you want to call it. Katie's done stuff before, so I think she knew, you know, kind of what was coming, but a lot of it caught me by surprise. So we went to The Invasion, which is the community that we've partnered with in Honduras for close to a week, and built some stuff.
Yes. So I should have said that, and it was with our church group. We had two groups go. So what was one of the more memorable moments of the trip?
Okay, I'm going to give you two.
All right.
There's two that I really like.
What were two of the more memorable moments of the trip?
Good, thank you. Okay, so we worked on two homes while we were down there. One, we poured a like concrete foundation, and then some local workers, you know, laid all the bricks or whatever to actually create the structure. And then the other one, when we got there, they were already laying the bricks. But like our last job was to put roofs on these two structures. So it's the last day that we're working, and it's forecasted that we're gonna see storms around like midday, lunchtime, right? So we get to work on these things anyway, and I know that, well, where's Steve? Steve's not here. So Steve was like dead set on getting these two roofs finished, and I was too, right? Because we just like to complete things. So we get to working on the first one, and we're coming up on noon, and I end up like slicing my leg open, and I'm bleeding everywhere, and it kind of puts a stop to everything. But the weather held off. And so once I was all bandaged up and we had lunch, we finished the first roof, and then the second roof, storm clouds are rolling in. We can hear the thunder, and Corey Brown and I are up on top of this roof, and it's metal, like sheets, right? So if we get struck by lightning, we're probably dead. And it's also like it starts raining, so it's also very slick. So that was dumb. We shouldn't have done that, but. But in, like, you know, the rain's starting to pour down on us, and we finish it, and it was just this, you know, really cool moment where I felt like we accomplished what we went there to do, and that kind of showed me that, like, I guess that, you know, God cares about small things, like holding off the weather so that we could do what we intended to do. Okay. Sorry, I'm exhausted, and getting up in front of people is terrifying for me, so I'm probably going to start sobbing at some point. I'm sorry. Okay, so then number two, Marilyn is this little 3.5-year-old girl that lives in The Invasion, and she, so I'm a germ freak, and she was constantly in, like, dirty, stained clothes, and she runs around barefoot, and she a lot of times would have, like, dog poop on her foot. Can I say poop?
Yeah.
Okay. So she'd have, you know, like, poop on her, and... But, like, I just fell in love with this little girl as soon as we got there. And so every night we sit down as a team and we, you know, have a discussion. Steve leads us in, and there's always, like, you know, one main idea that we're talking about. And one of the nights it was being content no matter, you know, what your circumstances are. And so here's this little girl who lives in, you know, dirt and filth, and she's always content. And so one day it starts pouring down rain while we're working, and instead of, you know, sitting around with everybody else, she went and got a piece of cardboard and held it like an umbrella and ran up and down the streets. And I just thought that was amazing, you know, that this little girl who lives in these conditions, like, she really finds contentness in everything that, you know, is going on around her. And, you know, I sit here with everything, and I'm still in want all the time. I'm never content. So that was a good lesson.
Would you say the trip, did it turn out as you expected?
Yes and no. So when I hear short-term mission trip, like the tradition that I came from, that to me sounds like we go hand out some tracts, and then we dunk people in a river, and then we spend a couple days at a beach, and then we go home. And it was not that. And the leaders of this trip made it very clear that it wasn't going to be that from the get-go, that this was going to be hard manual labor for a week and us trying to be relational for a week, and it was that exactly. Mm-hmm.
So this is, I told Kyle, this is interesting because we, you know, we'll do like Honduras reports after the trip, but it's always when it's really fresh in people's minds. It's a week and a half after the trip is kind of like our standard. So now that we're 3 months down the road, what is this, what's it like? Do you still think about the people there and the trip, and how often does that come up and your mind nowadays?
So honestly, it comes up daily. So I sit at a computer for 8 hours every day, and I don't really do anything, but my background on my computer like scrolls through
a bunch
of pictures.
There are other cat people that work here.
Yeah.
Okay.
They probably do the same. So... Okay, so I put a bunch of pictures from Honduras in my, you know, like background. It scrolls through a bunch of stuff, and so I see these pictures, and especially of Maryland, you know, they come up, and I do constantly think about, you know, these people and like the relationships that I got to establish there, that we established there, and it, you know, I'm terrible about prayer because I'm so self-reliant. That I never, you know, I never think to pray about the things that are going on in my life. And I'm also, when I do pray, very selfish. Like, I think about me and here's what I want. And it taught me to not be, you know, like now I pray for my friends down in Honduras. And so I guess I'm less selfish now. And it helps me to appreciate, you know, all the privilege that I have here. And it helps me to think about how I squander that and how I should be putting my resources towards, you know, people that truly need it.
That's good. Thank you. So what did this experience teach you about being a reflection of Jesus?
So I am unskilled in like construction. I don't speak Spanish. I'm very awkward and not relatable, but I was still able to go, you know, on this. And I was terrified. Like, I had no clue what was going to happen when I showed up there because I can't do anything. But the fact that I was able to, oh man, you show up and the kids immediately swarm you, and the people want to engage you, and that's, you know, that's all they want is to be engaged in relationship. So. It's not as hard as I thought it, you know, would be.
To be a reflection of Jesus.
Yeah. All you got to do is show love.
That's good. Thank you, Kyle. Sure. I will give you a hug and while people applause.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, thank you. That's a good idea. All right. Guest number two, Dr. Oz. Just joking. This is Christina Height. So, Christina, foster care has been a major part of your life in recent months.
We're married, for anyone who doesn't know, so this is weird.
You didn't let me get to my punchline.
Sorry.
But your husband told me it wasn't always this way. So tell us about how this journey started.
Okay. So... Dustin and I lived in Tulsa, Oklahoma for about 8 years in our 20s. And we're part of a church there, and some of our good friends were contacted by their, I guess, the state of Iowa about their niece and nephew, or their two nieces who were going into state custody and had actually been in state custody for a while. It was kind of like a black sheep of the family kind of situation, so they didn't really have contact with these girls, but basically they're like, hey, you're one of our last calls on our list. Is there any chance you want to take these two girls into your home? And this is a family, young, they're in their young, late, early 20s, had two girls of their own who were 2 and 3, and the mom had been adopted when she was younger when her parents were killed in a car accident. And so, you know, knowing her own story, she thought, well, how am I going to say no to taking two kids who are part of our family into our home? And so they said yes, and they brought in a 5-year-old and a 4-year-old girl to add to their 3-year-old and 2-year-old who they already had. And this is a family that was really struggling financially and just huge hearts. And so they were part of our church, and I was on staff at the time, and I thought, we have to do something to get them ready for the situation. Like, these kids could be coming at any moment. So we started a like little behind the scenes extreme home makeover type situation. I got in contact with one of their babysitters, and I said, hey, can we break into their house when they're at one of their classes learning how to be foster parents? And they're like, sure. So we showed up with some bunk beds, and we redid one of their rooms and made sure that the girls had somewhere to be, and videotaped them when they came home, and they were very freaked out. Anyway, it was an awesome day. And so that was kind of the beginning. It was just realizing there's something that our church could do, our church family could do. But as time went on with these girls in their home, they began to see a lot of behaviors that are typical from kids from trauma. And so they needed a lot of support. They didn't have any family there. And Dustin and I kind of stepped in. Awkward. Dustin and I kind of stepped in as surrogate aunt and uncle. And so we would watch them once a week so that the couple could go to small group and still be connected to community. And, you know, if there was an emergency room visit, one of us would go meet them there because the other one had to be home with the other kids. And so we sort of just took little steps. And I don't know, the passion for the foster care community grew inside of me. And as it grew in a small way by knowing individuals, I realized it's not just individuals, it's a huge broken system. And so I started learning and attending conferences, understanding the statistics around the situation. And once my eyes were open to it, there wasn't really any going back. So,
why would you say that the foster care system continues to be a place that you engage in mission?
Well, I think a lot of us have some like weird preconceived notions about what foster care is. I read something the other day about how a lot of people believe that kids in foster care are there because of like juvenile delinquency, and that is definitely not the case. Foster care is, the reason kids are removed from homes is because they are not safe where they are, whether that's neglect, physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse. These kids need somewhere safe to be. And so at any moment, I believe there's 400,000 kids in the foster care system right now in the United States. 104,000 of those kids are waiting to be adopted. That means their parents either tried or didn't try to work through whatever issues they had at home to get to reunite, and they weren't able to. So now they're just sitting and waiting somewhere. Some of those are in foster homes, some of those are in group homes. And so when you hear staggering statistics about that, and then you see individual lives of kids who you know their whole life would have gone on a different trajectory if someone hadn't stepped in, that's a big deal. And it's not just the kids. I mean, the whole system is overworked, underpaid, and it's tough. I mean, we have good friends who work in social work, and they see tough stuff every day. They go into people's homes that are parents who have had kids removed who are really trying and want to get their kids back, and maybe they were also a product of foster care and were never taught how to parent or were never taught how to take care of themselves, so how are they going to care for kids? And so just so many facets. Workers need care, biological families need care, foster families need care, and obviously the kids need care. And so it's a big issue, and I think it's an issue on God's heart. You know, he talks about, in the Bible, there's so many places where we talk about caring for the orphan, and this is our orphan crisis in the United States. It's foster care. There shouldn't be 104,000 kids waiting for homes.
I'm not sure if some of you may remember that this Christmas, instead of doing the Operation Christmas Child, we bought Christmas presents for foster kids and foster families through an organization that's local called the Forgotten Initiative. Tell us a little bit about that. You've become volunteer staff for I don't know how long now. A year or
yeah,
so?
Yeah, I got involved last September. So it's a really cool organization based out of Gridley. Anybody know where Gridley is? I didn't. It's small. But they run a lot of good, cool stuff there. They have an organization called Life Song for Orphans, which is their overseas adoption ministry. And then a subsect of that is the Forgotten Initiative that focuses on the care of the entire system of the foster care system. So for workers and all the people I described before, they support and they serve and they mentor that community. And I serve as volunteer staff there, and we just try to come around agencies because people who work at agencies know the needs, and even though they're working 40, 50, 60 plus hours a week, they can't always meet those needs. So maybe we bring in diapers, or maybe we care for workers by reminding them once a year, hey, you're not forgotten in the system either. Like, here's some gift cards, here's some extra fun stuff to do with the kids when you're carting them to and from visits. And so it's a really cool organization, multifaceted, and I love that it goes deep in with family relationships, and it's also wide in that you can just kind of dip your toe in at a basic level and not feel like you have to be involved in every aspect of the messiness, but you can give something small. So
what has this journey taught you about being a reflection of Jesus?
So Kyle said it's easy, and I think it's hard. I think it's hard because it reminds me of how judgmental I can be, and obviously, I don't know if everyone knows, we're currently fostering, and so you see so much messiness, and it's easy to try to place blame, and really, the goal in the situation is just to reflect love. And so while that sometimes does look like tough standards, and it sometimes does look like removal of kids from homes. It also sometimes looks like a lot of grace, and that's difficult. So I don't know. I think it's a good challenge, and it's worth it, but I think it can be hard. So,
well, thank you for sharing. Yeah. All right, Karen, wrap us up. Tell us a little bit about your recent season of life. You've been caring for the medical needs of your ex-husband, Randy Walters, who has attended here and kind of when he does come here still.
Well, I want to just first say that when Dustin asked me to share, I was a little bit hesitant. I had to talk to Randy first to be sure that this was okay with him, because he's a big part of my journey and the whole process of the last 43 years of my life. So I needed to really, really share that with him and get his encouragement to talk. So I want y'all to know that he was very encouraging, and he would have been here today, but he just isn't quite feeling up to it. I'll get to that in a little bit. when you asked me, I thought, oh, how am I going to compress 44 years of marriage and 3 kids into 4 to 5 minutes? That's kind of a fast journey, you know. And I'm a fast talker, but there's a limit. So if anything I say resonates with any of you today, I will tell you right off that I am one of those people who's always happy to follow anybody anywhere for a good cup of coffee and a good conversation. So talk to me later. Basically, what I would say is that Randy and I were very young, back in the 60s. We were products of that culture of the 60s. We weren't the hippies wearing the beads and everything, but we were definitely a product of the times in which we were raised, and that included our background in church. We were highly, I always say, religious Catholics who became very deeply religious evangelicals. And so when problems, as they always do, began to creep up in our marriage, we were far away from home in New Mexico, didn't have much of our usual support around, so we turned to our churches, we turned for counsel, and when that didn't work, we moved on a little bit. We segued into some secular counsel. We heard the same thing at every juncture because of the time, because of the way things were at that time. Here's our story. Randy came to me one day shortly after we were married and told me that from the time he'd been a young man that he had felt homosexual desires and that he had acted on them, and that he had been told by a priest that if he were to get married and have a good wife, a good woman to love, that all that would go away. Well, I guess you can probably imagine that that did not happen. And so we were told the same thing by all these counselors back in the day, that if we would just pray a little harder, try a little harder, if we would just kind of understand that Randy was stuck in a stage of development, that, you know, if we could expect him to be delivered. And we were told that he was experiencing a sexual addiction. And we just bought it, hook, line, and sinker. You know, for those of you who've talked to me, you know that I'm not entirely clear on all of this myself yet, but I know that that wasn't the whole answer. So I guess what I would say, well, first of all, because of our background, divorce, people ask me, did you consider divorce? Well, not even. It didn't even come across the plate for any of us. That wasn't something that was going to happen. We became best friends with a secret. And, you know, it wasn't all bad. We had some good memories, and we have 3 wonderful children and their spouses, and we've had a very good life in a lot of ways, but it wasn't a very vulnerable or authentic way to live a life. And it was like carrying around a weight all the time with everything we did, and it colored our interaction with everybody that we were with, no matter what. I'll just jump right ahead, fast forward. Believe me, I will keep this very short. October in 2012, Randy came to me and said, through a long process, that he had determined that for himself, he was not sexually addicted, but that he was a gay man. And that was the day that my marriage ended. It wasn't the day that my relationship with Randy ended, but it was the day that my marriage ended. I went through all the things that, Jackie, that you talked about. Went through that whole cycle of grief. You know, denial, reasoning, anger. Oh, deep anger. Fear, a lot of fear. Just all of those things kept repeating over and over. And I went through that whole cycle many times. I was feeling those feelings toward Randy, but I was also feeling them toward God. And I expressed them plenty. So that led me to a place where I just became so worn out that I think that's what God lets us do sometimes, just wear ourselves down to the place where we admit, Lord, there's nothing left. I'm at the end of me. And he led me into a spiritual practice of silence and solitude. And for me, this has been the life changer. And this has been the thing that has led me to where I am today in my journey. And I would say that it's through that that I came to a point of acceptance and a point of where I could let go of trying to control anybody but me. Any other circumstance, any other people, I understood I didn't have any real ability to control. And I was able to let go of that. That gave me a lot of freedom. It gave me a lot of peace. And it's just been incredible, the changes that have been happening in my life and around me since then. That's the time that I came to Imago, and I came here to talk to Charlie, whom I've known for a long time and been on staff with at another church many moons ago. And I found no judgment. I found no pat answers here. And I found the freedom to just live with my questions and the freedom to be real with people for the first time ever. And after 44 years of keeping such a big secret from even my closest friends and family, this was like a breath of fresh air to me. It's still difficult for me to talk to all of you out here. If one of you wants to smile once in a while, it'll be good. Okay. Okay. So anyhow, I began then to deconstruct my faith. And Charlie's talked a lot about that. That's when a second kind of fear came into my life. I thought, you know how it is, like if you're in a storm, the storm passes and then you're still standing there. If you're experiencing some kind of tidal wave or something, when it's over, it's over. But I felt like my spiritual life was experiencing some kind of an earthquake. And when terra firma isn't firma, and you don't know that the foundation of all the things you believed are real, oh, it's scary. It's a real deep fear again. And that was the second part of my journey up to this point. I began then to reconstruct my faith with much encouragement from people that have loved me here and loved me through all this. And I developed a real sense of forgiveness and, for the first time, a true love for Randy, my ex-husband, truly, it's a peaceful kind of love and just a total acceptance for the child of God that he is.
Thank you for giving that history. I think especially the context for, I mean, the heaviness and the, I mean, all of those years of conflict, and yet now you're caring for him.
Yeah.
So what was that moment like when you heard about his stomach cancer and deciding, you know what, even looking past all of the hurt and all of the, I mean, the brokenness of a relationship, and yet you're going to literally serve him, and now he's even, the best place to care for him was in your home, so now he's even living at your home. You've given him your bed because it's the most comfortable bed in the house, and you're living in the guest room or on a couch or something, right, you said? So how, I guess I admire that, I see Jesus in that, in you. So what was those early moments of deciding, I'm going to do this and serve my ex-husband, Randy?
Boy, when you put it that way, I'm not sure that I can point to a specific moment in time. I think the story that I've told you kind of was the deciding factor. It was when I began to let go and stop trying to exert control over people and other situations. It was when I came to a point when I realized three things, really, that I had to humble myself. Somebody else talked about that. Get my own desires out of the way. Yeah. And then I had to just let go of taking care of being responsible for anybody but me, spiritually and any other way. And then thirdly, I had to come to a place in my walk leading up to this where I really felt new God's love for me was real and that his grace was sufficient, no matter what life circumstance he led me into. Okay. So I think that rather than saying a specific time, it was a series of things that happened. And when we discovered he has gastric cancer, he's had his stomach removed, he's going through some very serious chemo and radiation treatments with lots of the side effects, and it's not a pretty picture. And our outlook, it's very uncertain at this point. I don't think I made a decision. I think it just got decided for me.
Well, thank you for sharing your story. You kind of answered my last question, so I'll skip past that. Unless there's something else you wanted to add.
Something else I was going to say. You asked me this morning, do I have times when it's hard? And yes, it is hard. Last week, somebody put something on Facebook that I really identified with, and it's kind of like this. It's, you know, we all tend to walk around with a smile on our face and act like everything's just fine, when deep down inside of our shoe, we feel like our sock is sliding off. And, you know, that'll happen to everybody. It'll happen to anyone at any time. It happens to me frequently. When that happens, though, rather than just going into a tailspin and walking away from the life that God's called me to, I just find that it's like a caution. Karen, stop. Be still. Know that I am God. Spend some quiet time. And for me, it's really important if I can find somebody I can be real with. Somebody I can trust with my emotions, and I try to talk to that person, and then just let God take over and get me back on track. And I think that's kind of important. You talked about the imperfectness in each of us. I mean, this is a journey. It's a journey not like this. It's this kind of journey, you know? Okay. And sometimes, whoa, and where did that come? That kind of thing. So anyway, yeah. That's kind of how it is. And I've learned to honor my relationship with everybody, including my ex-husband. And here's the thing. You know, you realize how very faithful God is when you experience it. And it's so, when you have a lot of these experiences and you look back in your past, it becomes easier to see how he was providing grace through it all. And so it's easier now to just step forward with a little confidence as an old lady.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing. I think your story lines up with what Summer said earlier, that sometimes the people that need the reflection of Jesus around us the most are the people in our family, the people. And maybe some of us are called to go wide and be a reflection of Jesus in the world. Some people are our best niche is in this city. And some people, it's in our families. Yeah. So thank you for being vulnerable and sharing today. Appreciate you, Karen.
I would just like to. Can I share one thing?
Yes,
before I
of
leave?
Course. Okay, I want to hug though after
okay,
you're
okay,
done.
Okay, okay, I'll hug. I gotta say, really, trying imperfectly as I do, there is no sweeter path than trying to live a life as a reflection of Jesus. There's just no sweeter place. And I asked you if I could share this. You forgot, but I have a mantra. This little poem.
Yeah, I'm
this
sorry.
Little poem is up on the wall in my home, and I read it every day. Because basically this is how I try to live my life, as imperfect as I am, okay? And I know a lot of you have heard it. It's by Mother Teresa, Do It Anyway. People are often unreasonable, illogical, and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you are kind, people may accuse you of being selfish, ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you are successful, you will win some false friends and some true enemies. Succeed anyway. If you're honest and frank, people may cheat you. Be honest anyway. When you spend years building, someone could destroy overnight. Build anyway. If you find serenity and happiness, they may be jealous, but be happy anyway. The good you do today, people will often forget tomorrow. Do good anyway. Give the world the best you have, and it may never be enough. Usually isn't. Give the world the best you've got anyway. You see, in the final analysis, it is between you and God. It was never between you and them anyway. And people, don't forget to breathe, okay?
Appreciate you. That was beautiful.
I like this subject.
Well, I hate rushing those stories, but we do want to take communion together today. So let me say she read that. I will skip my prayer. So if prayer is all the ways that we commune and communicate with God, then may this time of communion be a prayer of thanks. Prayer of thanks for God being with us and being in us and in the people around us. So would you please join me and as we say the Apostles' Creed together, and then we will celebrate communion.